Good to have you aboard along with us today. Hard to sit still as you listen to that, and pretty hard not to smile too. You're hearing music from the Allegheny City Ragtime Orchestra, who have a performance coming up at Carnegie Hall. That would be at the Carnegie Hall on Friday, November 4th, this coming Friday. Do I have that all correct?
You do. And you've actually gotten the, I mean, as close as I can go, Larry. Look at this.
No. That's a backup.
Okay. You're doing this thing, and I'm moving closer and closer into the microphone and then swallowing it, and it's just okay. Yeah, we're going to be playing, and thank you for correcting it. It's Allegheny City Ragtime Orchestra.
Ragtime Orchestra at the Carnegie Hall, which I like that. It's
Carnegie,
the,
Carnegie.
The Carnegie Hall, which is in Carnegie. There's lots of Carnegie Halls everywhere.
I've actually played at the Carnegie Hall twice.
I'm not surprised.
I know you're not surprised.
I'm not surprised at all. So tell me about, in celebration of the Allegheny City Ragtime Orchestra, Kira Bocalder is here. She plays clarinet, and also Dan Morrison, the bass player. Let's say hello to both of you. Good morning.
Hello, hello.
Good morning.
And who are we missing?
We're missing, like, most of the orchestra.
Yeah, Julie and
Stephen McGuff are probably
sleeping.
No. Stuff with their kids out in there in Upper St. Clair, and I'm sure Katie Pearson is sleeping somewhere right now. Although I did get text messages from her. And who else is in the orchestra?
There's a drummer,
Jim Benoit. I'm sure Jim Benoit is sleeping. Most of the people live in the North Side. Here.
Well, that's appropriate because it's the Allegheny City Ragtime Orchestra. How did this orchestra come together and why Allegheny City and Ragtime?
All right, so honestly, this is kind of like therapy to heal my painful childhood, believe it or not. You know, I remember being really excited about, and I should have brought, I had so much stuff I was going to bring you, and I was going to let you like have the experience that I experienced as a kid. But I remember,
not the painful experience.
Well, this is, well, you could be the painful thing, but then you would experience the regeneration of hope that will occur with this. But I remember looking through all of the books, like the major books on ragtime music as a kid. Like they all played ragtime, Scott Joplin, King of Rag, but more generic things. And Pittsburgh is not even listed as a footnote. There's been a book that came out in the last 10 years called That American Rag. And it basically traces everything ragtime-oriented in America back in the ragtime era. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening in, the ragtime era began about 1897 and went till 1917 when it was replaced by the original Dixieland Jazz Band, and the Roaring Twenties actually began in 1917. Hey, we're getting up on the 100th anniversary of the first jazz records, too. We have to talk, Larry. But
it'll be good. What we'll do is we'll do a show where you can tell us about all the records that you were going to break.
We could do that. Sure. So anyhow, but I remember looking in all of these books, and in this book, The American Rag, it lists every town in America and every ragtime composer
and
from
Pittsburgh.
And Pittsburgh's not even a footnote.
Did Pittsburgh have ragtime composers?
Pittsburgh had so many more things than anyone here realizes. There's always been stuff. But the big problem is those people who were supposed to be safeguarding the legacy, the musical legacy of Pittsburgh, just decided that this was not important. Everybody really kind of focuses post-1950. So everything pre-1950 was just judged to be inconsequential by the anointed Yinzer elite. Mm. How do you like that term?
I like it.
And so they just didn't. And then, sadly, people just, it drifts away from the collective consciousness of humanity. So part of what I've been doing is dealing with this sadness that I had as a kid, that there was nothing in Pittsburgh. There was nothing for me to connect to. This is why I left as quickly as I possibly could and moved to New Orleans. And
so you had no pianists to connect to? Well, you would have had Walt Harper, I guess.
No, because these are all, post-1950 things. Although, right as I was leaving, I found out about Earl Hines. But there was no documentation, and there is no documentation on anything ragtime-oriented happening in Pittsburgh.
How did you discover ragtime?
Well, let's stay on topic here, Larry. We don't want to move off here about the ragtime. So I was in fourth grade. I came down. I remember every detail about this. I came down to eat my Cocoa Wheats, and my mother said to me, "Oh, Jack Bogut played something on the radio yesterday I think you're going to like."
The Entertainer.
It was when The Sting had come out, and there's The Entertainer, and I was transformed. I was moved to a different time, a different place. Everything changed for me in that moment, and it really put me on a course that I'm still on.
Well, between U.B. Blake and his resurgence around that same time, and Marvin Hamlisch playing that song, yeah, I could see that happening.
And Joshua Rifkin. I remember seeing U.B. Blake on TV around that. And I was in fourth grade. I was 10 years old. And I just really threw myself into this. But my research, they actually called me, the people at Maggie Forbes at the Carnegie Hall, Music Hall, and Carnegie, Pennsylvania, refers to me as a musical archaeologist. I'm a musical archaeologist. So I have, along with the help of collectors from around the world and even some people here in town, I've uncovered all of these composers from Pittsburgh, most of them from here in this neighborhood. We're here at Children's Square in Allegheny City, and otherwise known as the north side of Pittsburgh. And I've uncovered music that has not been heard in over 100 years.
Who are some of these composers?
Well, the one thing that you heard on the air just now was a piece by George Rieg, who was one of the most famous of the Pittsburgh composers. He grew up right around the corner on Middle Street, and there was Rieg's Hotel on Middle Street here in the north side. And these pieces were published nationally, so orchestras around the country would have been performing these pieces. But there's other guys. There was Rhys David, who lived on Arch Street, and Rhys David was a member of the Jewish community of the north side of Allegheny City and was a founding member of the Concordia Club. There was Moses Bertrand Howard, who had a music store on East Ohio Street, and published his own publishing company. Rhys David also had his own publishing company, an Allegheny City thing. And the most exciting guy that I've discovered is a guy by the name of K.F.W. Gunther. And this is music that hasn't been heard in over 100 years. We're going to premiere the new orchestration that I just completed this morning of Colonial Bells, dedicated to the Women's Club of Bell Vernon. Yes.
Not by you, but by the composer.
Dedicated to the Women's Club of Bell Vernon, and then a piece called The Atlantic Rag, and the good folks at the main branch of the library, Tim Williams, Julie Hanafy at the Carnegie Library, they have this Pittsburgh collection.
Yes, it's wonderful.
And they have said that I'm a one-man renaissance of this whole thing. So, but I'm talking. We have all these people that have come here. Why don't you talk to them, Larry? Ask them their opinions of the Ragtime Works. Remember, I write your checks.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, actually, let me start just with you, Dan. I know you play bass.
Mm-hmm.
So have you learned more about Ragtime? Has this been a passion for you? Did Tom introduce you to it? Or what's your relationship with the music?
Well, I've always heard it on the radio, but it wasn't until meeting Tom, actually playing with a tango group, that he introduced me to rag and asked me to play some of these concerts. It's really exciting to play with someone who is so knowledgeable and so enthusiastic about something. It's like an encyclopedia of the music.
Yeah, I'll say. And I'm trying to remember if I heard much ragtime growing up, and I think it's The Entertainer from The Sting, and anything by Scott Joplin, I guess, and U.B. Blake. And why don't we also turn to Kiera How did you discover ragtime, if at all? Now you play clarinet.
So I'm a classically trained clarinetist, and I was driving back from an orchestra gig, and I got a phone call from Tom, and he was asking if I'd be interested in playing in this ragtime group. And I remember the first thing I said to him was, well, Tom, you know, I'm really flattered, but I've got to tell you, I'm sorry, I don't play jazz. And I don't have any sort of improvisatory background. I mean, it's just, I'm a classical clarinetist. And he's like, no, this is going to be fine. This is not like Dixieland, if that's what you're thinking it's going to be. Ragtime music was classically trained musicians playing music that was, it was written down, and it's complicated, and there's no improv, and don't worry about it, you're going to be fine. And I'm like, okay. So, because, I mean, I thought I was in for something more along the lines of, like, Dixieland.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point as I think about it. And all you need to do is think about the entertainer that we've all heard. It was Marvin Hamlisch playing, and how hang on 1 second.
Yeah. But composed by Scott Joplin, who was an African-American child of two former slaves. And this is, again, this really shows like kind of the lack of exposure to this music. I can go in and I can play. I've played Dr. John stuff. You know, is the piano live here? It's funky stuff. And they said, oh, that's ragtime. I play Teddy Wilson. And they think it's ragtime. I got stopped by someone in the street who said, oh, my grandmother loved Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday is not ragtime music. I mean, we've got this very sadly narrow focus on what music is. And it's all post-1950s stuff. So I'm trying to educate Pittsburgh in the difference between what this music really is. And once you really hear it, it's not Dixieland. It's classical music, and it's African-American classical music that was celebrated and imitated by everyone across the country and across the world.
When it's speaking, you know, about the entertainer, it's Scott Joplin, the precision with which that piece is played. And there, as I think about it, there is, you think of Dixieland, and I think you confuse it. There's a better word for it. It's easy to confuse it with ragtime. I think a lot of, in particular, ragtime and Dixieland, because Dixieland, there's lots of improvisation, right?
It should be constant improvisation.
Constant improvisation. But ragtime, there's quite a precision as you play it. Let's listen. This is the Ramrod Rag. Anything you want to tell us about
Ramrod
this?
Ramrod Rag is one of these discoveries of a forgotten Pittsburgh composer. This is a piece by George Rieg, who was from Allegheny City, died in 1918. We're not sure if he died in the war, if he died during the flu epidemic. It's quite possible the flu epidemic. And he's from Deutschtown here. And this is a cool piece. Give a listen to it. Thank you.
This is the very first performance by the Allegheny City Ragtime Orchestra from a few years ago. It's the Ramrod Rag that you just heard Tom describe. And there are 11 players playing all together. And Kara, are you playing here?
Yep. Okay. I think I played every gig except for one. There was one gig I couldn't make.
I missed one gig.
And it's 11 altogether. And how are these, when these songs are written, how are they scored? Can they be played by different groups of people? Or are they arranged specifically for the ensemble you have?
So that's the interesting thing. It's a really flexible group. Tom could talk more about what the original instrumentation was, but we're talking like violin, viola, cello, flute, clarinet, piano, trumpet, trombone, set, and upright bass. But we've done gigs where we've cut out the strings just because of people's availability. It sounds great. We've had gigs where we've reduced some numbers, but it's pretty much the core is always piano, set, flute, clarinet, trumpet, trombone, bass. There's some people you can't get away with not having, but it's totally flexible, which I think stems from how this music was performed back in the day. I mean, these were bands and orchestras that were in every civic area. I mean, every club that you went to, hotel. Tom talks about it a lot at our gigs, how, you know, in absence of recorded music, there was a band everywhere that you went.
We'll talk about this now, Tom. Join in here. So, pervasive throughout the United States, but other countries as well?
Yeah, as well. Everywhere around the world, before the advent of canned music, if you were to go into the lobby of a hotel, the William Penn Hotel, there's not Muzak being piped over the sound system. There was no Muzak. There was no sound system. There was an orchestra there. Anywhere you went, there was an orchestra playing, and of various sizes, depending upon how opulent the place was, what the budget was. If it's a big fancy restaurant, you could have a full orchestra. If you also think of if it was a small place, there would have been a smaller version of it. Now, if you think about the theaters, now most of the big places downtown Pittsburgh started off as silent movie houses. Heinz Hall was a silent movie house. The Benedum was the Stanley. If you look on the side, it says the Stanley Photoplay. It was a silent movie house. And in these places were full symphony orchestras playing to accompany silent films. Now, these orchestras would have also provided entertainment for the patrons who came in. And there would be an overture. There'd be a feature number. There's a story about Louis Armstrong playing for silent movies in Chicago. And he had these big features that he would do. And they'd play for the silent pictures. And it's just it's a fascinating thing. But the cool thing about this, with all of these orchestrations are they could be played. If you were in a town where all you have is a clarinet player, a violinist, a piano player, and a drummer, you could play these orchestrations. They are very ingeniously imagined by those people who wrote the orchestration, so they can be played by anywhere between five players and a full symphony and still maintain the same musical integrity within these things. And when I am scoring these things, a lot of these Pittsburgh rags, the orchestrations for them no longer exist. And so I have studied extensively how these arrangers would do their craft, like what this person does, what this instrument does, what this instrument does. And I'm able to recreate that same technique and allowing us to play a piece by Carl Bruno, who wrote the Pittsburgh Gazette Cakewalk in 1902. The Pittsburgh Gazette, the one that's now the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, there was a song called the Pittsburgh Gazette.
Do you have that in your head, what it sounds like?
I think it goes... Something
something like that. Yeah. And the really neat thing that I've discovered in these sheet music things that were published by local Pittsburgh publishers or by the newspapers, like La Trinacria. There was an Italian language newspaper published biweekly, nationally distributed Italian language newspaper published on Woods Run that went all over the country. And La Trinacria was the name of it. And then, what was the guy's name? Mario Salvatore Rosierto from Naples, a nice Jewish boy, wrote La Trinacria rag. And it was published by this newspaper. You know, they would come in like the newspaper. You'd get your newspaper, and there would be sheet music there. And then you would play it because you don't have an iPod in 1902.
So let me ask you, by the way, this is Tom Roberts who's speaking, Pittsburgh-born pianist known throughout the world. Kira Buchalter is here too. Buchalter, sorry about that, Kira. Who is a clarinetist. Are you playing with a symphony or orchestra as well?
I play all over town. I like to say that I play a little bit with everyone. So like right now I'm in the middle of rehearsals for Salome with Pittsburgh Opera, which is quite a production.
I'll bet.
But yeah, classically trained, playing all over. I play in the Westmoreland Symphony Orchestra, and I sub with the PSO, and I sub with Pittsburgh Opera and the ballet, and just all over town. I'm driving to Canton, Ohio, to play with the Canton Symphony this afternoon. So, yeah.
A journey woman. are you from Pittsburgh originally?
No, or? I'm actually from Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
What brought you here?
I met Tommy Thompson, he just retired from the Pittsburgh Symphony. I was in Champaign, Illinois, checking out the University of Illinois to go to graduate school, and the Pittsburgh Symphony was on tour. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I'm here, Symphony's on tour, I should go see them. And I happened to run into Tommy Thompson, and we hit it off, and we had dinner together, and he said, I'd like you to apply to Carnegie Mellon. I said, I don't know anything about Carnegie Mellon. And he's like, it's in Pittsburgh, PA. I'm like, I've never been to Pittsburgh, I don't know anything. So I auditioned, and I loved it. I loved the PSO, and that's why I came to Pittsburgh.
That's terrific, and you're here ever since.
Yep. I met my husband here. He's also a clarinet player. He's my backup sub if we ever need a clarinet player on the fly. But, yeah, we love Pittsburgh. So culturally rich. It's been a wonderful place to start our careers.
That's great. And let's talk a little bit more with Dan, playing bass with the Allegheny City Ragtime Orchestra. Mm-hmm. But tell me more about your past.
Trained classically, studied here in Duquesne. I've played just about any kind of music you can play with a bass. Just in the next weeks, I have a choir concert with Slippery Rock. I have tango music to play. I'm playing with Allegheny City. I have a Butler Symphony concert. So it's, you know, the bass player is always in demand.
Yeah, so it would seem. Are you from here originally?
Yeah, I grew up in the South Hills in Bethel Park.
Excellent. And a question I had for you, Tom, is we were talking about the rags you mentioned. For the Pittsburgh Gazette to have a rag, and you just mentioned the Italian newspaper to have a rag, were rags commissioned by commercial organizations, or how did that affiliation come to be?
If you think about it, ragtime was the popular music of that day. And so you didn't need to commission something. It happened. And it was a fad. There were music publishers that were going crazy about publishing things to feed this fad for ragtime music. And it wasn't just music played by piano. In fact, most of these Pittsburgh rags that I've discovered, particularly the ones by KFW Gunther, who was a band leader from the East End of Pittsburgh of German descent, they don't really work pianistically. But when you hear them as performed by an orchestra, all of the depth, all of the colors that are there really, really come out.
So
they were played by bands, they were played by orchestras, and no matter where you went, you would hear Sousa's band played ragtime as well.
Well, and so the connection or titling a rag after a newspaper, though, for example, was that the composer's, well, it's the composer's choice, but is he just connecting, or she connecting with pop culture, or how?
We will never know, Larry, because these people are no longer here, and no one really, when they had the opportunity to talk to them and ask them, so how did this come about? While they were still with us, no one here took the time to ask them, well, why did you call it this? Why did you? So this is part of the lost thing, but luckily, there's still enough stuff, little traces that we can work around. There's a guy in Virginia by the name of Professor Bill Edwards who has found more information on George Rieg than anyone has, simply because his job gives him access to these digitalized online newspapers. And if you were to go to Professor Bill, just look at Professor Bill Edwards, and there's a whole thing. I'm sure you can look it up here right now in the studio. He's discovered all this information on George Rieg, who is just someone that Pittsburghers aren't even aware about it.
Interesting. And we haven't. As I think about it, RAG is really not considered as its own genre or studied as its the particular, it's misunderstood, I think,
well,
as you were saying before.
Sadly, it's misunderstood in Pittsburgh simply because no one knows about it. If you were to go anywhere else, people are aware of what RAG. This is why it does not exist in any of these books. If researchers were coming, let's just say, here is Dr. Edward Berlin, who's doing a book, or John Hassey from the Smithsonian is going to do a study of ragtime across the United States. And where would you go to talk to someone here? You'd think you'd go to the universities. The universities don't really know what this is. They have no, it's like the line from, what is it, Bull Durham. It's like trying to describe a fungo to a Martian. You know, actually, I've uncovered an incredible collection of things at CalU. Do you know that there is an archive of music at California University that no one knows is there, that many of the faculty members have said, let's throw that away? Now, when I've gone in there and I've posted it on Facebook, the things that I've found, people from all over the world say, oh, my God, can you look for this for me? Vince Giordano has said, Mike, he calls everybody Mike, Mike, look for this. I need you to look for Roman. I need you to look for another orchestra leader in Washington, D.C., who was involved with the Library of Congress, was saying, hey, I can't find, I think it's called Peter Gink. And as soon as he sent me this message on my phone, the next thing I turned over was Peter Gink.
Lucky you, because I was going to ask you how that was all organized.
It's not organized. Yeah. It's not organized. It's in packets that have been wrapped up in twine, probably in 1927, and no one has looked at them since 1927. And there they are. Now, there are people there that have said, well, that music was meant to be played once and thrown away. Thank God they didn't throw it away, because the stuff that is there is incredible, including Pittsburgh composers that no one realizes is there. So there's these treasure troves that are hiding around the country. And who knows what other universities have these things, but nobody has the knowledge to understand what it is. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Of course.
If you cannot understand, if there's something that is outside of your area of knowledge, then it becomes meaningless, and you can't appreciate what it is.
Oh, you don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you got. Dan has something to say here.
No, I was interested when you were talking with me about Joplin had even written full symphonic works and operas that I don't think many people really know about.
Yeah, that's true. But Joplin, and this is a heartbreak. Joplin's in his last years, he was not unproductive. Joplin wrote a piano concerto. Joplin wrote a full symphony. Joplin wrote another opera. He wrote, well, there's one opera that survives, Treemonitia. There is large scale choral works that were thrown away in the 1960s by an attorney. This is not thrown away by an uneducated person. This is someone who should have known better and threw it away. But there's so much stuff out there waiting to be discovered.
And thrown away, I guess.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Why? As part of an estate?
It was stuff that was left. It was actually in the possession of a guy named Wilbur Sweatman, who was a Harlem band leader, a very early African American band leader and clarinetist, and he was the guy that gave Duke Ellington his first gig in New York City. He had possession of this, and the attorneys threw it away at the end. Same thing happened with Lucky Roberts's works, thrown away by family members. That was sadly in 2003. I will never get over that.
I'm going to play this.
What are you going to play?
I don't know. We're going to hear it.
That's the original Rags.
The original Rags is the name of it.
That's right.
Not just saying that's the original Rags.
Who's playing it?
That's being played by the Banjo Rascals Ragtime Orchestra. And it's a good example, which is why I pulled it out, of what Kara was saying earlier. You can pretty much accomplish
this stuff with anyone.
Listen to that. Maybe three banjos, a tuba. How far back does this go, do you know?
That's Joplin's first publication from 1898, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. And you mentioned Pittsburgh's dearth of, well, not wanting to remember its ragtime legacy, but it was respected certainly during the 20 years or so when it was being created.
Of course, it was probably respected even after that. But just, you know, we started throwing away history.
Yeah, you wonder why. What would have happened to have caused everybody to simply put it aside and move to something different?
Well, I have my theories, but I'm a conspiracy theorist anyway, so we won't go into that right now.
Okay.
Even though I did take my happy pills this morning, I'm not going to get into that. That's right. The drones may come in and attack me here.
Careful. Let's have that happen outside of the studio.
Yes.
Let's talk about the concert that's going to be coming up. Friday, November 4th. That's this coming Friday at 7:30 at the Carnegie Hall in Carnegie. So I suspect you'll talk about the music in addition to performing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, one of the things that I've started doing is I had a buddy in Washington, D.C. when I lived there. His name was Shahid. And Shahid was the piano player with Kool and the Gang. And he was also the piano player with Billy Paul. Do you remember that? Mrs. Jones, we got a thing. He was the piano player with Billy Paul, and he discovered ragtime and stride.
I have to get this out of my system. Just a minute. Mrs. Jones.
Larry. Is it on skip somewhere?
Something is happening here. This is not good, Larry.
There's a glitch in the matrix.
I have another rag for you. See if you can identify this one.
Of course I can, Larry.
I know you can.
It's Pineapple Rag.
Yes, the Pineapple Rag.
Who's playing it?
It's being played by Scott Kirby.
Oh, I know Scott Kirby. He used to play piano on the streets on Royal Street. He had a piano that he would roll out. This was in New Orleans. He'd roll the piano out into the street and play on Royal Street.
See, we haven't forgotten ragtime here.
No, we have not. And we'll try to make this happen again. People will remember ragtime. Pittsburgh will become proud of its past.
Here's a question for you.
Yes.
How did ragtime get its name?
No one knows. Although the great theory it's ragged time.
Okay.
That with the syncopations. Give me a tune. Let's see. What could we play? A straightforward little tune like Mary Had a Little. Simple. Here's Mary Had a Little Lamb. If I were to play this in ragtime, what I would do is I would displace the accents.
That makes sense.
And I'll tell you what, in its day, ragtime was considered dangerous. There's somewhere up there on the internet where it'll say ragtime worse than drugs. Ragtime music, because of this displacement of the beat, it caused the uppity folks to feel like, This is making my posterior move in ways that I don't want it to move, and it needs to. And even it's not proper. It's not going to be this way. But there was the Musicians Union was going to fine members for playing ragtime music.
Really?
Yeah, preachers were calling out from the pulpits of the sins of ragtime music and how it would loosen the morals of young ladies and ruin society. And I think a lot of it is because of this displacement of that beat.
Sure. Yeah.
It makes you feel naughty.
How did...
There was like that little boy when Tom was playing at the Park House, a month ago?
Oh, yeah.
There was this little kid. He could have been 5 or 6. The music just made him dance, I wouldn't say he stole the show. He stole the show. He was the visual attraction of the show. This little kid couldn't stop dancing for an hour or so.
Yeah, it's infectious. Wait, tell me about Tiger Rag. Do you know,
I know
its
about
origin?
Well, Tiger Rag could have been, there's two different stories on it, but we're not going to play it at this concert. But Tiger Rag Rag has two people that claim creation. One is Dominic Nick LaRocca of the original Dixieland Jazz Band, who actually probably gives the most believable explanation of its creation. The other one is a guy, Jelly Roll Morton, who said that he transformed it from quadrilles. I actually believe LaRocca is the guy that put it together. But LaRocca talks about like putting bits of tango in it. Little bits of tangos, and then like one part of da 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 da, and all these different things.
Yeah.
But Jelly, the one thing that I like that Jelly would do is in the back end of it there, he would make the tiger roar with his elbow. So on and so forth.
And we sing Hold That Tiger to that
Hold rag. That Tiger!
But was the rag written with those words, or did we...
I think someone probably put it in. I have the original 78 RPM record on Victor Batwing recorded in 1918. Purchased it, Whistling Willie's Fine Used C78 in Jerry's Records. And it's a pretty cool little record.
Yeah, I'll bet. So the concert is coming
Wednesday. Yes, let's talk about the concert. We're here to get people to come on out.
Well, we just have a few minutes here left. So the concert, it's Friday, 7:30. It's at the Carnegie Music Hall. And it's a beautiful hall.
Acoustically, it's spectacular. What does the information there on the card say, Larry, in terms of where folks can get tickets?
I think the best bet is to go to carnegie.org is your best bet for tickets.
Excellent.
And we also have a link up on our website. Nice to have you here, as always, Tom, but it's really nice to have you, too.
It's been a pleasure. Too.
Thanks for having us.
Anything you want to mention in our remaining seconds or so?
Do you want to give shout-outs to anyone at home? Do you want to tell them what school you go to and what grade you're in?
I think the little girls in front of us stole that show.
Yes, they probably did. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell them, shout-outs on behalf of Tom?
I just think it's going to be a great concert, full of really talented musicians.
We'll say hi to Harry, Tom's best friend.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Harry.
Harry's a dog, by the way.
Yes, yes.
Not a dog, the dog.
The dog.
The dog.
He's a a dog. It's not onomatopoetic. What is it when the dog resembles its name?
Onomatopoeia?
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess it is onomatopoetic. But the dog is what it is. It's self-defined.
Yeah.
Self-defined. Well, look, for the whole orchestra together, the Allegheny City Ragtime Orchestra, Carnegie Hall in Carnegie, November 4th at 7:30. Here's what they sound like. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.